Hi, this is John Amundson, and I want to welcome you to the next podcast in a series of podcasts presented for you by the Psychologist Association of Alberta. It is difficult not to play through that whole thing because it has such a dramatic presence and sets the stage for our discussion today. The purpose of these podcasts is to provide information that's timely, topical, and even controversial to the membership for the most part. It is Amundson wading into the literature, fumbling around and trying to put certain timely, topical, and controversial issues before the membership. Generally speaking, what I have done is looked at select articles, done summaries of those articles so you don't have to read them, and can continue to say, I'm a psychologist, therefore I am widely based in my discipline. Again, my favorite scarecrow to attack. Not just that I am a three-star practitioner of EMDR, but I know a little bit about social psychology, neuro stuff. I know a little bit about political psychology, public policy and the law, etc., and so on and so on. All right, that said, today I am kind of elaborating on a theme that a couple of articles that we will review in just a second provide the foundation for. We're going to talk about conspiracy issues, because we've had a lot of that during COVID, and also politically we see a lot of conspiracy stuff. So we're going to talk about conspiracy and some articles that have addressed that, as well as the concept of the big lie. These things shake hands with each other. That is, the big lie shakes hands with conspiracy, and why the big lie is so appealing. Initially, there's a joke now that says when we start talking about freedom, rights, conspiracy, etc., you say, start the stopwatch. Let's see how long before, drum roll, I should play the Zarathustra again, drum roll, how long before the Nazi analogy marches in, from the right or from the left. This has become a high watermark or an anchor from many of the discussions. And once that comes in, the discussions are over. For example, when we look at the trucker protests, there's swastikas, there's the word Hitler, there's, Marjorie Taylor Greene, hilarious. You can't make this stuff up. Marjorie Taylor Greene, the other day, she says, Nancy Pelosi and her gazpacho police. I think she meant Gestapo police, but she said gazpacho police. So, how long does it take in any conversation before some analogy, some parallel metaphor related to Hitler, Nazis, and that whole thing? Okay, so that said, Amundson indulges in it as well, because the foundation for a lot of the turmoil that we're seeing has been spoken of, discussed, and elaborated upon. In two really cool publications that, if you're interested, you can go and read. The first one is The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. This was a book that was thick as a brick from the 60s. And, I was from a semi-literate family. Neither of my parents completed high school, so semi-literate family. But I read it when I was in high school, and this real thick book. And I'm reading through, probably at that time more interested in, you know, the gruesome parts about warfare and death camps and, retribution, the Nuremberg trials and whatever. But what it talks about are the factors, the multidimensional issues that relate to the rise of, in this case, National Socialism in Germany. The second book that I think people should really be familiar with is a book by Hannah Arendt. Hannah Arendt was a political philosopher who had been a student and a lover of Heidegger, and was able to escape, Jewish, but able to escape from the 1930s and 40s German political machinations. And she wrote a book called On Totalitarianism, The Origins of Totalitarianism. And then she also wrote about Eichmann in his trial Israel his part in the Final Solution, death camps. And she wrote an article called The Banality of Evil, meaning that, he wasn't much to him. Just wandered in, got this position, went ahead, and on and on. Not that there's a huge behind the scenes a machine of evil to which arise the dark lords. These are basically, she said, just you, me, and whatever, and we're just thrown into the opportunity, and all of a sudden we become that, not that we are that and go there. Anyway, the reason that the totalitarian book is mentioned is because she talks about things that have appeared in the United States through, the Republican Party. And she talks about the need to demolish the pillars of democracy progressively in order to have only left the strong leader, the single person. So they speak of one, the attack on the press, on free press, so that the voice of the press is questioned. Now, I would say it is fair if we look at that and we look at from the side of Chomsky and the side of Trump. Chomsky said for a year, he wrote a wonderful book called The Manufacture of Consent. He said where the press and the media is used politically to create certain momentum and images that are suitable to accomplishing political ends. For example, Ronald Reagan developed the concept of the welfare mother. And he took this one select image of an Afro-American woman who manufactured a variety of identities to extract money from the welfare system. And that image really seized the heart of white Republicans. That Afro-Americans are getting more things than us, and they're doing it by cheating, lying, and on and on. So Chomsky talked about the manufacture of consent, where the media will propagate ideas or be provided with information. That is filtered through a political agenda. So we see on the right the same issue, where as the press speaks, it is denied veracity, and the statements are, this is fake news. All right, so anyway, I'm not going to elaborate on each of these, but she says, first you attack the legitimacy of press, then you attack, and you continue to attack, the legitimacy of the judicial system, or you manufacture a judicial system that is subordinate to a certain political agenda. Third, she says, you deny the legitimacy of elections and electors, that the process of representation of the people is presented as fraudulent. So literally she goes through, and this was written in the 50s, the steps that are the foundations for totalitarianism. All right, so this foundation in rise and fall of the big lie, the propagation of a certain image that can carry forth the emotional momentum of people. And then the second, the actual process that takes place in opening the opportunities for totalitarianism contribute to conspiracy. So the articles we're looking at today have to do with this idea of conspiracy. And then also the propagation of the big lie is an aspect of that. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with the concept of the big lie, this is central to all the works that came out of the late 40s, 50s, into the 60s regarding National Socialism and the rise of fascism. And so the big lie means you produce a falsehood. And then you propagate it, and the researchers say that in spite of it being so big, it's counterintuitive, that the bigger it is, the more it becomes an organizing principle in the life of the person so invested. Let me go over this one more time. In the articles on conspiracy and adherence to conspiracy, We'll finish the podcast by talking about the personality characteristics that are identified. But once there is the socio-emotional tail of the dog shaking the dog is the lie that the emotions will then create whatever is necessary, or well, the person will create whatever is necessary to sustain the emotions. The Jim Jones and the story in South America with his followers. Any unusual, difficult, or cognitive contortionism necessary to sustain the essential belief, this person is behind, knows what's going on behind it all. Another aspect is that very sense that whether it's truckers at the border or QAnon or other individuals involved in fringe and radical beliefs, there's a sense that behind it all is a moving force, a deeper meaning, and they are in touch with it. I remember being in Hawaii and a canoe race, and there was a guy that I knew, and he came over and he all of a sudden he goes, "Well, you know, 9/11. And he started going on about that being an inside job. And so his need to be in touch with something that was behind it all, a larger truth. In a an article in the New York Review of Books, a better podcaster would have that right here, and I would quote the book. But there is a book on men who were mistaken for gods. And the issue in it is how individuals with charismatic or opportunistic placement seem to be the person that is behind it all. So if we line up with them, if we grab a hold of their set of beliefs, we then are in touch with that thing that's going on behind it all. So these articles circle around this. And bring this in and say, when the right constellation of variables emerge, and we'll take the protesters at the border, people talk about pandemic fatigue. Well, the people that will suffer the most with pandemic fatigue are the individuals who have the highest need for certainty and the lowest ability to tolerate ambiguity. In the research on folks who are involved in such things, there's also a resistance to cognitive exertion. The reflective and deliberate process is demanding. There is an exertion that goes with it. So individuals that are not prone to cognitive exertion, that find that difficult or painful and have low tolerance for uncertainty or high need for certainty and low tolerance for ambiguity are also part of the individuals that fall into this category we're talking about. So the individual characteristics as identified through Big Five research and other methods have determined that those are part of the issue. So here we are. We're kind of starting with this idea of a foundation around how unusual and dangerous beliefs arise, how it captures and carries people forward, and then linking this to some of the things we're seeing going on pandemically. The biggest thing is in any left or right protest is the desire for agency, the need for agency. I want to feel that I have an impact in my world. And hence, easy to suddenly find oneself saying, we're not moving until Trudeau resigns. The belief that somehow that agentic position can be, well, it has to be recognized in the world, but it may not be recognized in fact. Anyway, I'll stop because this thing can go on and on and on. Thanks. Tune in, tune them out, all the things I usually say.